Hello, and welcome to episode 65 of the Surreal Global Fantasy Football Podcast. Today, myself, Hybe, and you'll never walk alone, are delighted to be joined by Crypto News founder, Sam Deering, for a bit of a limited card special. So this week, we'll be talking about his huge success rate in SO5, winning rares and super rares with limited cards. We'll look at limited pricing, how it's evolved over the last 4 months. We'll look at what's happening in the world of crypto. What is the crypto news? ETH price predictions and insight, and much, much more. So Sam, it's a pleasure to have you on. Welcome.
Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the intro.
Welcome, welcome to this four-hour special January podcast extravaganza. We got so much to cover today.
Good to get back to it. Sam, you've really started to get involved in the limited market since that came on board. Do you want to tell us about your background? Tell us
before he does, go sneak in because Sam's like he's a good 10, 11 hours ahead of us right now, and we've still got half an hour to go to set our teams. He might have some DMP news that we don't know about because he's in the future. we should get some info out of him. Who's not playing in the Serie A this weekend?
Unfortunately, I don't think I have a full lineup, so it doesn't bother me this game.
Yeah, fair enough.
For the first time in a while, yeah, it's been pretty dry. You got the AFCON coming soon, so that should liven up a bit. But I actually joined about 4 months ago. So when the J-League got onboarded, which was August 2020, the news came through, so we covered the story. And so I logged into the platform. I like to check the new projects out before we cover the story, do the due diligence and stuff. So I logged into the platform, had a look around. There wasn't much going on at that time. And I noticed there was a few, I was just instantly just searching for Premier League players, and there was just West Ham. I don't think I could find any other teams. So I just selected a whole bunch of West Ham players, Antonio and Suchek and a few others. And there wasn't much else. So I just closed it and then got on with business and forgot about it. So that was a mistake. and then almost exactly a year later, I was looking through OpenSea, which is the NFT marketplace. And I saw Antonio. Mikel Antonio, and I was like, what the hell? What's he doing there? And it was $1,500. And I was thinking, I have one of these. I logged back into SoRare. It was a year later. And I could sell Antonio on OpenSea. So I tried to export my common cards using the private key and export it into the wallet and load it into OpenSea to try and sell it for I could make some money off the cards, which I collected, right, a year earlier. And then obviously that failed because you can't export common cards. And I didn't know that. And there was no documentation. So I was just scrolling through Discord trying to find out why my cards weren't there. Why couldn't I sell them for the $1,500?
You thought you had a winner there.
Yeah, so that was kind of quite a funny story.
Well, you got the right color cards, though, haven't you? Yeah. Had you converted from Villa to West Ham during the course of the year as well?
Well, there was nothing on there, mate, when I first looked
at
it.
That's true, yeah.
It was very skin and
bone. No Marvelous Nakamba.
I think, like, I was quite disappointed I didn't see the potential at that time when I looked at it, because I see hundreds of projects. So I just log in and have a look and just didn't see it. So, unfortunately. But when I logged in a year later, the whole thing was completely different. And I saw the potential. Obviously, it was an excellently designed the website. And I thought the auction system was brilliant. The secondary market was an excellent idea where you can do direct offers. The card designs were decent. And then I looked into the technology stack that the team is using. They're using GraphQL, which is great technology, React.js. Obviously, they're using Ethereum, which I was impressed with. And they were using technologies like Algolia for the fuzzy search. So if you type in a name in the search, if you misspell it, it'll still come up with a player. I don't know if you've noticed that. That's the sort of technology they're using. And I was super impressed with that. So I was like, this team knows what they're doing. The product that they have now has come a long way, and I like where they're going. And you're mixing fantasy football with cryptocurrencies. I mean, that's just the match made in heaven for me. And then I dig down a bit deeper. So obviously there's lacking documentation. The SO5 seemed a bit weird. Like usually fantasy football has 11 players. This had like five, and that was a bit weird. The league names were weird to me, like champion versus challenger. I was like, what is this crap? there's no documentation. And obviously there was lots of different colored cards, and you it was easy to work out what they were. But then when you entered the common league, obviously, you know, you could have two rare cards in there, and you could only captain a rare card. And I didn't have a rare card, so I couldn't put a captain. So I thought that was a terrible decision. I don't know who made that decision. Obviously, they've fixed that now and renamed it to the Rookie League, which is good. And we'll probably get into that in a bit, where I think that it's obvious they're going to remove the Commons from the Rare Division. I think that the sooner they do that, the better. Yeah, so just to finish on that. So my conclusion was that if I was going to get involved in So Rare, I was basically backing three things. So I was backing So Rare, the company, and their ability to execute, Ethereum, the blockchain, and for being stable and secure and expand, and then also the players. So obviously hoping they don't get injured, transferred, or dropped or whatever. So those were the three things. So I was quite happy with those three things, backing those three things. So that was a green light for me to get in. Just to mention, give a plug to John Nellis, because I reached out to him after watching some of his videos on YouTube, and the dude's an absolute legend. He Skyped with me face to face and answered all my questions and everything, and he was just brilliant. So plug there.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, John's a good guy. I'm sure we'll have him back on the pod at some point, or be doing some, get involved with one of his vlogs. Hoping he's going to be over in Scotland at some point.
You got 12 months to grow your beard out, Ivy, so you can put some of those stuff in your, you know, his lights or whatever he had in his across his beard the other week.
I can tell you now, if I tried for 12 months, I still wouldn't have a full beard like John's. It would, yeah, a bit of bum fluff on the face. That's about it.
It's one of those ones where it's like, I look funny at the time, but I don't know in 12 months from now whether or not we're going to see some memes of John with Christmas lights in his beard.
Oh, no, but he'll love that. He won't worry about that. John will love the Christmas memes.
Did you guys appear on that drunk cast?
So I didn't. I was away. But Mark, I think you did.
Yeah, I went on and said a few words with a husky voice from today. So, yeah, no, it was good crack, actually. Yeah, a lot of familiar guests know their stuff. And me. So, added a bit. No, I think, yeah, we covered off a lot of the usual topics, which was good, and put the world of Sorare to rights. And, it really is amazing just how much content, good quality content, there is out there at the moment for people to enjoy. And, you know, as consumers, you know, we play the game. And I think the more you play the game, the irony is the less time you probably need to spend on the game. So once you've got the foundation of your collection, you know, there obviously are always ways that you can improve, and there's always news and research you're looking out for. But at the moment, the platform isn't the place to get that information. You always, you know, the platform's there to execute your main decisions, buying and selling a card and setting your teams. Other than that, all the other interaction you have is probably with managers, with sites, with other Discord channels, other forms of media where you're getting information to help you execute better on the decisions in the site. So for me, I mean, it's, you know, we haven't covered that topic yet. Something I'd like to see again in 2022 is more reasons to actually spend more time on the Sorare site itself. So Sorare Data do that really, really well in the fact that you know, that they just keep plying, you know, layer upon layer, reason upon reason for, you know, needing to spend time on Sorare Data. You find one stat that leads to another stat. You're looking for information now on injury suspensions. It's eventually all building up there as an aggregator. The only thing you can't do on Sorare Data is buy the cards, sell the cards. Yeah, okay, you can set your teams because they've got their own tournaments now, but yeah, buying and selling a card. So I think that user experience, and whether that comes all nicely wrapped in an app, or whether or not the relationship between Sorare and Sorare Data gets even tighter, you know, hopefully we'll have more of a universal place to go and get our data, or dare I say it, maybe people, the content creators, can put their content on a part of the platform itself. So again, that's another reason you're staying on the Sorare site or on the Sorare app and just getting your data or as much of your data through there.
That is interesting, Mark, because Sorare Data has been absolute godsend. It's an absolutely brilliant platform. They designed it brilliantly. It's got all the information there. And obviously the app is a game changer. It's brilliant. So I'm thinking, where does Sorare go from here? Why do we have Sorare Data? Why is it not just one thing? So now when the app comes out for Sorare, what are they going to do? Because Sorare Data just nailed it out of the park. So are they going to just clone it and then add a few things on? Doesn't make any sense to have both. I think maybe they should just merge them into one.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think, you know, whenever, you know, this goes back a long time now to, you know, design discussions, game design discussions. And the one thing that Sorare were always wary of was you've got this platform of clubs from all corners of the globe, various different qualities. I mean, you've got the creme de la creme teams, the Liverpools of the world, and then you've got, you know, the mediocre teams. You've got, you know, let's be fair, teams that got great fan bases, but in the world of football, they're ranked pretty low. And whenever you get to the stage where Serrera are always apprehensive about rankings, whether that be player rankings, team rankings, and showing one team or one player to be superior to another one. So where Serrera Data doesn't have that challenge is that they can turn around and say, Lewandowski is the best player in the world, or Mbappe is the best player in the world, and this guy playing for, you know, a Chilean second division team, unfortunately, he's not as good as this guy who's best in the world. And they can display that in a way and say, this is first of 30,000. And this guy, unfortunately, is 30,000th out of 30,000 players, or whatever it happens to be. And I don't think you're going to get that type of data or certainly it displayed in that way. I think on Serrera Native, all of the information has to be, you know, the player. I'm looking at a player now, he's just flashing up because I've got the thing going in front of me. We've got Mele Mullenstein from RKC Volvic. Yeah. So I'm sure he's a fantastic under 23 Dutch defensive prospect. But the fact is that they can't show him as being any better or worse than Memphis Depay, who he's sitting next to on the transfer market at the moment. Whereas you would imagine that Serrera Data would be able to show you different data points to say, well, actually, Memphis Depay is a slightly better player at this stage of his career than Mele Mullenstein or whatever. So I personally think it is potentially down to that. So they can't show favouritism. They don't want to show, as I say, one club in a better light than another club. It's a universal platform. And this is almost like a shop window for all of them to shine and show their players at the best possible opportunity. What Serrera Data does is then take that information and help people like us, the users, by saying, well, actually, out of all those players that you can buy on Serrera, this one is actually better. Or this one plays more minutes. This one gets more points. This one does this. This one does that. And then that influences how we then behave on the native platform itself.
So you think from a business strategy point of view, like that gives them a bit more flexibility in terms of like all the legal stuff, like so they don't get into trouble?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's trouble or I think it's just equality more than anything else. It's just showing every single club and player in the same light. Every single team on there's got their own fan bases. Yes, some fan bases are deeper, bigger, more global than others. But the fact is, why should someone be put on a pedestal as being the better player? And then all of a sudden, the teams that are in the lower half of the table or in the relegation zone or in a second tier division, you know, they shouldn't get any worse coverage. You know, they've agreed their terms to be on the platform, to share their collectibles with their fans. So they should be given the same level of coverage. And that's done through the scarcity system. You know, it's not as if the bigger clubs get, you know, 500 cards of their 500 rares and the lesser clubs have, you know, 100. Everyone gets the same scarcity and supply. So I think it is just about making sure that when they go and present to a new club and say, we want you on the platform, or would you like to be on the platform? It's like, well, yeah, you're going to get the same treatment as every other club. It's as simple as that. We're not going to show your players to be any different to, you know, the Juventuses, the Inter Milans, the Bayern Munichs, you know, the PSGs of the world. You will be it alongside all of these in the same way.
Yeah,
I think it makes sense. It's going to be difficult to then onboard newer leagues. So say the Scottish Premier League came on. You've got teams like Hibs. If we had a ranking system there, it wouldn't be much of an appeal for them to sign up. You know, it'd be a bit of a kick in the teeth. You'd be highlighting these players as compared to
they have said when Hibs comes on board, they're going to be introducing a new tier. They go tier four,
challenger, challenger minus. Is it?
Are they putting Aston Villa in there as well?
They'd have to, really. So Sam, you've looked at a lot into the platform before actually deciding whether to get involved. But when you did get involved, it looks like you've went in pretty hard. You bought over 500 limited cards since launch. So talk to us about them. I'm looking through them just now. There's all sorts of weird and wonderful names there. Lots of big bets that you're making on goalkeepers, I can see. There's some that you've got 10, 12 of.
So, so when I joined, I decided, what's my main priority? So my main priority decided was to have fun, to play the SO5 fantasy. So, and then secondary to that was the trading and growing the Easy account. So once I'd made that decision really clear, that made my thought process and decisions on buying the players like really easy. So I just started buying like a machine gun, just buying everything I liked basically. and all the best players that I could watch on TV and follow and cheer on. Then that was basically at the peak of the, I was buying a lot of the limited cards at the peak of the quote unquote boom that just happened with the limiteds. And obviously a lot of them that I bought, nearly all of them that I bought, I've held. So I haven't sold hardly any. So I've held them, and some of them have dropped, you know, up to 80% in value since then. And so my gallery took quite a bit of a hit after buying all those limiteds at quite peak prices. It just took quite a bit of a smash in my gallery. So since then, I've sort of switched my strategy a little bit and actually analyzed what's going on here with the platform and worked out what I think is the most valuable assets on the platform. And the conclusion, which you guys probably agree, is I think the most valuable asset, digital asset on the platform, is the under 23 goalkeepers. So once I knew that, I just went, I'm going all in on that. So my aim is to get, and so what I noticed was, if you bought, as soon as a goalkeeper gets minutes, they value like 5x's pretty much straight away. And then if they get regular minutes, it like 10x's from there. So like the growth in terms of ETH is quite high. So even with limiteds, like at the moment you can buy under 23 limiteds for like 10 bucks and they're sitting on the bench, so under 23. So like if something happens to the main keeper, they might get some game time. And as soon as they do, a few of them already have, their value rises. So I'm aiming to just maybe collect 10 of all under 23 limited versions. So that was sort of the plan. We're sort of halfway through that at the moment with about 250 keepers.
So more of a hope that some of these make it and get that game time rather than specific research on individual players that you think are going to get that, or is it just a blanket approach?
So there are a lot of players and I do a lot of research because I'm very interested in it, but there'll always be ones that skip through, like you don't realize, you just don't know what you don't know, right? So I didn't know there was that many under 23 goalkeepers that were on the bench. There's a lot of them. I don't know how many. I've got a list of about 30 or something, so that's a lot. I didn't realize there was that many. Instead of like targeting them specifically, I'm just buy 10 of all of them. I'm playing this for the long run, so I'm just hoping in the future these 19, 20 year olds, you know, in a few years time will get transferred or get some game time.
Nice. And so you've also got a lot of big name players. You've got the Mbappes, the Depays. So how are you balancing that? You're obviously targeting the SO5 competitions and now trying to win those.
Yeah, so Rare, when I first joined, they would auction, they were onboarding these new teams and new cards, and they were starting the auctions around midnight our time, 1 o'clock, sometimes 2 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, like if I wanted to participate in the first of the auctions, I had to like stay up like really, really late. And so I was getting FOMO'd into buying, like, so for example, I bought number 2 mint on Mbappe for 1.1 ETH, they're limited. And that's because it was like almost 2 a.m. or something and I didn't want to stay up any longer, so I just bought it. So I was like, I really want one, so I just got FOMO and I wasn't going to stop, so I just kept bidding and yep. It went too high. And I thought, I'm not going to sell him, so I don't care if it drops, so I'm just going to hold and hopefully he's worth more than an ETH in the future. But now it's at around 0.6, so that's 40% reduction already.
One thing, Sam, obviously you got involved in the peak, which is like the downside to that is that some of the cards obviously dropped in value. But in terms of, you've got such an impressive record in terms of cards that you won from that first, you know, splurge of transfers that you made. Are you finding that the extra bits of XP, I mean, I haven't looked at your teams fully, so, you know, I guess it's a combination of skill. You've obviously chosen the right 5 players on a given game week to produce the results. But have you also come up against other teams of similar compositions when you've gone, has that paying that premium for Mbappe early doors or paying a premium for some of these cards to get them into your collection, are you squeezing out an extra 0.5, 1%, 1.5% on some of these cards, which is also adding up across a lineup of 5 and then going, wow, that extra 5-8 points has made a big difference there?
Yeah, so I actually love fantasy football. Like, it's one of my favourite things to do and I get quite obsessive about it. So obviously I do the basics. So I look at form and fixtures like everyone else. But obviously I'm a computer programmer as well. So like I tapped into a lot of data APIs and I was coding, like I've got some personal projects which I coded to help me sort of analyze who was going to select and who was going to buy and that sort of stuff. So that was, so I used those tools and they helped with the injuries and suspensions as well. So I was able to tap into that data and it would tell me like which players were in, which players were out and that sort of stuff. So that was kind of cool. So yeah, that's pretty much all I did. And to answer your question, Harvey, the extra XP hasn't been as big as I thought it would be so far. So I thought holding onto the cards and growing that XP, having a limited card was say 12% or something on it. I think I've got, the first card I bought was Daily Blind and I think he's on 10.5% at the moment. I thought that would be that extra edge. So getting in early in the limiteds will give me the edge in the SO5. But what's happened is if a player can't score 100, it's not worth playing in SO5. And that sounds really absurd, but that's my thought process. So what I'm buying now, like if a player can't score 80, 90, 100, you know, and I can't rely on him, I don't buy him for SO5. I'm obviously just trading him.
Yeah, I guess you see that more at the limited and then the rare level. As we know now, you have to get a perfect score. We're not quite there yet on the super rares. We're not quite there on the uniques because you can still see lineups that use two super rares in Division One and can still comfortably beat five uniques, for example. But I think, that's just down to the supply in the markets. You know, once we've got another 500 top super rares out there, you know, I think we're going to start to see 525, 550 become the norm in Division Two. You know, I think it'll still be a little bit longer before we see that across the unique divisions or the Division Ones, because it's not like we're just all playing one Division One. There's still five, six Division Ones, you know, when MLS and Asia are up and running. And if that's the case, you're going to have a lot of people with a lot of deep galleries to spread themselves across all the Division Ones in order for 550, 575 to be that magical score that you need to achieve. You know, you can look across the Division Ones and you will see most weeks a big hitting 550 to 600 points, but you don't know which Division One that's going to end up going to be in. It could be Asia one week, it could be All-Star one week, it could be under 23, depending on where a particular manager's put their heaviest hitters. But yeah, I would imagine across the limiteds and the rares now, unless it's a game week like this week where there's very few fixtures, you're going to need to be, as you said, near as damn it perfect across, you know, at least 85 plus or average across the five players.
People buying the limited cards now, I mean, if they're trying to win SO5, obviously stacks is one way to go, but I feel like you need to aim for the players that can hit that not an 90 or 100 score like quite consistently, or at least one out of every five.
It seems to be very competitive. And just to your point, Mark, we are noticing it in the rare space, aren't we? Over the last 6 months, that has become a lot.
I'm noticing it too. I'm getting less podiums in Division 4 now. Jeez, it's getting tough out there.
Definitely, right? There are less rewards that you're getting. But that's a good thing. That was always to be expected. We want more users to come on the platform. You want that challenge. And I think this platform has got a lot more growth to come, a lot more ways it's going to develop out. And at the moment, it is very tough in rare and the limited divisions, unless you've got the strongest lineups in.
Just a little spin-off then, in terms of, you know, just something came to mind there. Serere Mega has that dice game each week where you can put, you know, they're a random number, 0 to 100, and you try and choose a player in your gallery that you think is going to get closest to that number. It's probably not in the spirit of fantasy football as we all know it, but do you think there's the potential for, you know, a different style of game where, you know, maybe you've got your limited cards and you go, right, this week you've got to have five scoring cards to get you closest to 200 points, or five scoring cards to get you closest to 300. And you can, you know, different stipulations without going over or without going under, whatever it happens to be. So rather than who's got the purest, best, highest scoring team, can you see different game iterations being popular? Would that attract you? Do you think that would attract others? Say, I've got all these limiteds. There are lots of different game modes that I could potentially enter.
Yeah, not really for me as a main game. It might be a little side game that could spin up in the Discords. I don't think it has much more appetite than that, I'd suggest. But there's definitely lots of different things that could be done to utilise these cards in a different way. I like Serere Mega and the ability to put in different types of lineups. They've now introduced these new features. So we've got boots, we've got shirts, so they're obviously going to introduce some other aspect to that game. I think there's going to be appetite for some of it, but I want the core game to develop and be the fantasy football site that the whole world is playing. FPL has got 8 million odd people playing it every week. It's pretty rubbish. Like, it's boring. I log into it for 5 minutes, set my teams, think about a few injuries, and then that's it. I think Surreal has something that can captivate that audience in a different way. And I think we need to just develop that core game out now.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think the side games will appear and there'll be lots of them. There'll be lots of exciting ones with dice and whatever. But the core game needs to be simple. After running business for quite a few years now, like, keeping stuff simple is like on the top of my list. Everything we do, try and keep it simple. And I think they've bitten off more than they can chew with the manpower that they currently have. And I know they're expanding the team. So hopefully with that extra manpower, they can deliver on some of these things. But the current game is way too complicated. And I do like the complexities because I'm a power user like you guys. So now I'm in, and I like all these things. But for new users and to get that wide adoption, it needs to be simple. And like, look at FPL. It's like totally simple, even though I think the scoring system is better on Surreal than FPL, because FPL you just get points for goals and assists basically, whereas here you can cheer on defensive mids and stuff like that, which is good. I think a lot of the core game, like now they have the legends and all these other stuff that's going on. They have like some divisions like Challenger have more teams than Champion, and then you've got all these other new leagues that are entering, and then there could be Div 2s entering. So I think they probably need to just keep it simple. It's tough when they've got all these things going on.
But. Oh, yeah, look, Matt was just off the cuff there more again, because, again, we've entered another year and and we've still not found that magical formula for Tier 2 and Tier 3. And listening to yourself there as someone that has bought a considerable amount of limited cards, you've also, along with that, got a very strict criteria as to why and who you would purchase. So you've got, you know, your pure tournament players, which I don't know what percentage of the database is scoring 80, 85 plus potential. Then you've got obviously a cross-section of players there that you could probably feel, you know, based on trading ranges or world reputation, you see something at a really good price. You think, well, there's going to be someone out there that's prepared to pay a little bit more than that when I can flip it onto the market. But I imagine that you're also neglecting quite a large percentage of that database as well, because, say, from a scoring point of view, They're never gonna hit the lights out. There could even be DMPs. Older guys that might not ever get a consistent regular game for a club again. And so I still feel that there's so much wasted potential out there because there's such a large cross section of the database, which most people just, rightly so at the moment, turn their nose up to, because what's the point in owning these cards?
Yeah, that, you're totally right there, Mark. But that's apparent in all fantasy games. It's always like a group of players that are in the middle that sort of no one looks at. And I play lots of fantasy sports. So the biggest sports over here in Australia are the NRL, which is a rugby, the AFL, which is the stupid Australian football game that they have, and which is huge over here, and cricket. So they've got the Big Bash T20 on at the moment. They do the fantasy sports with that as well. And in all of those, I play all of them. And in all of those, there's a group of players that no one ever picks. And I think that's just part of it.
Oh, sure. But are these games being advertised as fantasy games, or are they being advertised as collectible platforms? Because Surreal still uses the word collectible front and centre. And I imagine that's also a selling point when they go to a club and say, put your collectibles on our platform. So I still think that message isn't quite there. It's like they're going to the clubs, they're presenting it to us as gamers that these are collectible cards. Yet deep down, you only got to be on the platform for a short space of time to realize these aren't collectibles. They are simply vehicles for me to be as good as I can be in the fantasy aspect of the game. There's no underlying fundamental reason why I should collect these cards. So as long as they've got that attachment to the word collectible, for me, you know, I'm holding on to, you know, certain limited cards or first edition cards or cards from earlier seasons that I think, you know, hopefully might appreciate in value over time. I know they've got no value to me playing SO5. I'm scrolling through, you know, my training team, just dumping people in there that I've got never any, you know, intention to play in a tournament, unless, again, it's a massive shorthanded week and I've got some freak guy that's playing for Al Hilal and it's the, you know, Asian Champions League only. So for me, it's how do we, you know, as you said, you've got all these games at front and center saying we are a fantasy game. And as you said, as a statistician, you're going to go straight to the those that are going to give you the most bang for your buck. But as soon as that word collectible comes in, it's like, well, okay, well, you know, maybe I can buy this tier two or tier three because there might be something later on down the line for owning this. But right now, that really isn't clear.
Yeah, I think that needs to probably be addressed. I think there have been a lot of managers who've came on the platform and have tailored their collections based on that collectability aspect and the view of that's going to be something that's important in the future. But we saw initially, we had managers, didn't we? We had Maradona and it was going to be different managers brought in or coach cards. And then we've seen the legend cards and that's kind of just fizzled out. I think we need to see more coming from that space. We need to see something developed for the legends to give a reason for the people who have bought these cards already to own them and to be able to use them. And yeah, just a bit more clarity on what going forward the model wants to be. I think, is it just an SO5 game? Is it a fantasy football game? Or is there more strands to that? And are we trying to build something that has all of those in the one place? I think, yeah, earlier on, it was easier to see what you were buying and you could take that view. I think now, as we said, there's been a lot of new additions in and it's got a little bit messy. And I think, yeah, 2022 is a massive year. We've seen the post from Brian. I think everyone's probably seen that on Twitter. It's going to be a massive year. There's loads going on, right? So we're going to have 200 more employees. We're going to have an app. There's going to be a lot of marketing going on. A new sport added. Does that create more confusion? Is that what's needed at this particular time? I'm not 100% sure, but we will see another sport added onto this.
Yeah, so I feel sorry for those people that have collected the rare legends because apparently, and I think that maybe... I'm just going to say it. I think it was a bit irresponsible of them to release that without telling us what they could be using. They told us if we could use an SO5 and then they would get the country or the club top score in their position. But there was no like indication of when it would be coming. They said it would be coming like, say, once every month in a special weekly. But there's just like lack of information there. I think they just released it. And those people that have bought a collection of, say, rare legends have now like their values obviously tanked. I can't imagine, I don't know if you guys have any of those.
I bought a bunch of limited just for I didn't buy into it straight away. I thought I seen the communication that came out. It was a little bit woolly in terms of what it wasn't clear when you were going to be able to use them. There was a suggestion that they would have utility, but exactly what that utility was going to be and how to then be able to price them was a bit unknown to me. I think there was some fear that these cards would be overpowered and then would be, you know, yeah, it would kill the game and you needed to keep them separate from SO5. So I think there was a lot of questions that came out from the community when they were released. There was a lot of excitement about them. The video that came out with them was really cool. These cards looked like something, yeah, we want to own. I want to be involved in this. But I felt it had to be kept separate from the main SO5 game. I feel there's probably still something they can do with that. But yeah, it's been a little while without much information on what's coming with those cards. I've bought a bunch of limited cards for my own enjoyment, really. A bunch of these legends. I'd like to add a few more, and I can probably now do so at like a quarter of the price that I initially bought them. So that's fine. That's great. But I've still not done it because I don't know what they're going to hold for me, what they're actually going to be used for. So yep. It might just be something nice to have in a collection. But am I actually going to be able to use them and enjoy them game week to game week? I don't think so. So,
I think the writing was on the wall from the initial Medium post and perhaps should have taken heed of my own. Legends will drop weekdays. So, okay, fine. So they started out at that pace, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, boom, Monday, Tuesday. And then all of a sudden stopped. Like, oh. And then it was like Thursday. And then the blog post was edited. Now they're coming out every Thursday. Okay, great. Every Thursday. And then, okay, yeah. I mean, I don't mind speaking up if there's something which I don't necessarily agree with. And because I was collecting at least one of each limited, I didn't. There's two players I've got rares for, but most of them, it was just I wanted a token limited and just, you know, but build a collection of those out. Then it got to Thursday and I'd be like, no legend. I'd be like, well, where's the legend? It's Thursday. Oh, okay. And then there was two Thursdays gone, no legend again. And then it was almost like, Are we forcing the issue here? Is it that difficult to put a legend out? If you've got an agreement with 50, 100 legends, okay, even if you do once a week, it'll take a full season. Surely the market can take one card per week. But I think it goes back to the tournaments again. I mean, whilst we've just had that this last bit of the conversation, they've announced the AFCON rules for game week 2, 3, 4. So it's just come out on Twitter. So it's, again, it's the special weekly. So all this hype for AFCON, go get your AFCON cards. We're going to cover AFCON. You got one chance, basically. I'm sure there'll be other special weeklies as the tournament progresses. Are we not beyond the stage where we can just have one special weekly that then sort of like puts all these AFCON cards together? I mean, as you just said there, Hybe, from a legends point of view, it seems that every time something new or just, you know, doesn't quite conform to the regions or under 23 or global, it's like, okay, let's whack that in the special weekly, you know, and you've got one slot that fits all, and that's not evolved. There's no reason in my mind that we couldn't have a legends 1-4, division 1-4. And then, yes, okay, like this one, you've got to put four players playing in the Africa Cup of Nations in your team. So I guess that's because unless you've got Herve Kofi in goal, you've probably got no chance of fielding a goalkeeper. So they've obviously seen that the limited supply for AFCON of goalkeepers and gone, okay, well, if you've got four outfield players, we'll let you qualify and off you go. But for legends as well, you've got some people that just want to buy the very, you know, a legend from the club. You know, there's a lot of AC Milan fans out there have gone for the Shevchenko. You know, there's you know, There's so many different connections to a legend. Why can't you just go for, divisions 1-5? And if you've got one limited legend, then you can play that in the limited division 5 along with four other players and stick with that original scoring matrix, which they hinted at, which was that legend then takes on the score of the highest scoring player from that club in that position. If that's too much of a challenge to code, or if that's too much of a challenge to implement, based on, you know, a framework that's pretty much there in place, then yeah, I think it was wrong, as you said, to hint or promise at that stage. And if that's too much of a push to evolve or iterate the special weekly or add another region, then wow. I mean, yeah, the ambitions that Brian set out for 2022, fantastic, but you know, yeah. I'm struggling to see how that gets executed on if little things like a tournament reshuffle are not something which can be done, which I'm pretty sure we can all go to other games and see other iterations. That in my mind shouldn't be too difficult. Add on a Legends Division 1-5, even if there's only one prize each week, or even if it's for fun, or even if it's for XP, or even if it's for something else, at least give everyone the feel that the cards in which they've bought over the last 3 to 4 months, you know, are at least on the pathway to being able to be used and enjoyed a lot more, rather than gathering dust and causing a potential rift between the trust that the community has built over 2.5 years to, like, this looks now feels like a bit cash grabby. You know, you've dropped a load of legends and now we can all see what's happening. And then when someone new enters the platform, and yeah, they're going to go and get content from providers and hints and tips and what have you, it's going to be a bit of a stigma. People are going to be talking about legends in such a way. And when you look on the transfer market, and once you've taken away the tier 2 and tier 3s, the legends really do stand out. These are world-class legends that, you know, we all know and love from, you know, our earliest years and memories of football. Yet on the platform, they're still being viewed and spoken about, unfortunately, in a negative light because of the inability to show us the, or give us options to play with them with. Rant over.
Yeah. Go on, Hyman.
Well needed. No, I'm just looking at the prices. So I'm half inclined just to put my faith in Surreira that they will get these right and they will turn these into a good game, because the prices have dropped massively compared to what I picked them up for.
There's two points there you just mentioned, Mark. The first thing is keeping the community happy. And so I don't know whether you wanted to dive into this now or wait, but I think that the creation of a decentralized organization, the DAO, as part of SoRare, so SoRare DAO, where members of the community actually vote on development features, on a pool of liquidity, where that goes to prizes or developments or improvements or onboarding new teams or whatever. But the community is involved in direct decisions rather than just some survey that they send out once in a while, or, you know, digging through the general chat on Discord or the AMA, actually having a dedicated DAO. So do you want me to explain how that might work? Like how I think they will do this year. I think,
yeah, please go for it.
So we just dive in because of the time. But So I really do think they'll create a DAO. I think that a lot of other crypto communities are creating DAOs, and that's to stand for, the layperson stands for decentralized autonomous organization. And so what that is essentially just a decentralized governance by the community. So the community has a direct impact on what the centralized company is doing. So you can have a DAO with a decentralized company, or you can have it associated with a centralized company like SoRare. And so they can create, so how it would work is SoRare would create the SoRare Foundation, which manages DAO treasury, which is basically just a wallet which holds the ETH. And so the way I think it could work is they could use the legend cards or a special card that's minted. I think the legend card would be a good one because that would give them extra utility. And so say there was 100 of these special legend cards that they minted. If you have a legend card, then you have a seat, a vote on the DAO. And that if you own that legend card, then it gives you like entrance into the private Discord channel where the governance discussions happen. And anyone in the DAO can submit a proposal for voting. So you could say, I propose we put the legends in a new 1-5 league and leave them out the special weekly, and say, we propose, this is the proposal. We have say 3 legends and you can use 2 normal cards. And it's a bit like Global All-Star, and this is the proposal. Then the DAO would vote on that. And so the community would have its say. And then what happens is you use the money that was built up from the sale of the legends cards. You could also use like the 5% commission on the secondary market, which that money goes directly into the DAO. So that builds up that cash pool. And then periodically you have the votes and you approve something and then you action it. Yeah, so I think that could also work well with it could keep the community happy, which I think is super important for this project to succeed, especially the early adopters that have been around for a while, like you guys. So having them have direct sales and being part of this decentralized organization for just owning the NFT, they don't have to do the KYC, nothing, none of that. They basically just have a voting power by owning the NFT. If they want out, they can just sell it on the auction or transfer it to someone else, that's fine. So what do you guys think of that idea?
When's the token coming out, Giselle?
No, I don't think the token will come out, but the DAO can be created without the token because they do have the ERC20 token already, which is on the layer 2 start.
Sorry, that was a rubbish Discord. Oh, sorry, Irvin. rubbish Discord joke.
I hope that makes sense. No,
I like a lot of those ideas. We've toyed with some of those in Blackpool in terms of, you know, a couple of people said, how can we, you know, improve your decision making? You know, obviously, you know, we're not all perfect. We are going to get the occasional DMP. We are going to miss a suspension or an injury here and there. And people are saying, well, if I'm going to own some of your token, which I will benefit from if you're successful, how can I try and influence that success? And I think in reality, it's like all these ambitious new DAOs that are being structured to buy a sports team, buy this, buy a membership here, buy that. In reality, they sound in practicality, they sound okay. But you know how much work goes into setting your teams, you know, prior to a deadline on a busy week. You know, how are you going to get those key decisions in a timely fashion in order to execute them? I think on the big macro ones that you've mentioned there, I think, yeah, the 5%, whether that goes into a sub DAO or whether that just goes to Serere revenues, I think that's long overdue. I mean, we talked just before you come in on air about discussion on common goalkeepers being used in D4 or in the rare divisions. I think there are some fundamental decisions that the community would happily get behind. They know they're coming, or they feel that they know it's been coming. If they turned around tomorrow and said, as of, you know, date later on in the month or 1st of February, you know, the secondary market will change and there'll be a fee that's taken from each transaction. Yeah, you're going to get people complain. Of course you will. But I don't think from anyone that's played the game for longer than 3 or 6 months, it's going to come as a wild shock. And certainly when you play other games, and that's a, you know, anything you do on OpenSea, you lose 2.5 to 5% straight off the bat anyway. So it's conditioned in the way that most people trade their crypto assets these days anyway. And again, the rumors through Discord and the way in which the tournaments have been restructured through the new platform look, yeah, it hopefully won't come as a surprise to that many people. I mean, as I say, you've got to the stage where, you know, I would imagine part of your decision to go and stock up on goalkeepers, partly on the under 23 supply, but also because of the way you might see how the tournaments are going to evolve. And if they do shut the door to common entries into Division 4 for goalkeepers, that's another thing which is going to, you know, benefit those like yourself who are gobbling up and, you know, and stockpiling, you know, a particular type of player. I tried to do it for a year on fullbacks before that. I tried to do it a year on defensive midfielders. I think, you know, both times I was justified because I felt the game was going to evolve and defensive midfielders would then be given their time in the sun, then fullbacks. But, you know, I've had to make decisions in the last few months as well to sell on all my Trents and sell on, you know, various fullbacks to execute a different plan now, because I can't just sit there stockpiling fullbacks or defensive midfielders waiting for the game to evolve. Maybe that will happen with goalkeepers, or maybe we'll be sitting in 12 months' time going, wonder when they're going to take common goalkeepers out of Division 4, and those that have stockpiled goalkeepers are going to have to wait even longer before their master plan comes to fruition.
But no, I think lots of good points. I think a DAO would be interesting for Surreer, but we talked about complexity and onboarding new users. I think that would probably be one of the sticking points. I think Surreer, very much a Web3 tech stack on the back end, but a lot of the front-facing stuff, it feels very Web2, and to onboard new users, we've seen without having Ramp and having, you know, fiat to ETH onboarding tools there, there was a difficulty in onboarding masses of users. I think there is a challenge in getting people to adopt cryptocurrency in this space. So these are things that are naturally going to evolve over the coming years. I think Surreer are doing a good job of trying to balance that and introducing NFTs to a wider community of people who are not necessarily aware of that before. But yeah, I think you need to understand what is the appetite of this, the Surreer user base, and what are their target audience. If it is purely those who are very au fait with the Web3 world and want to be involved in DAOs and all these possibilities, then great. But that's probably a much smaller target audience than if it is the general football fan. And so I think you're going to see a bit of a, almost feeling like a very Web2 element to it on the front end, because that's the way you're going to have to be able to onboard and get new users in and making them feel comfortable with this space.
Yeah, I think in terms of a development team, they've got a development team. And they have, you know, to keep it simple, they've got a to-do list, right? On development team, we're doing these features, we've got these. And then they'll prioritize those features, right? So the way that they prioritize those features, probably internally at the moment, you could see. So maybe they have a few people like yourself, like some power users that have been for a while that they ask. But there's no, it would be, that's where the DAO would come in handy, where they'd be able to just have a vote. Which features do you want first? And so just prioritize the development. So be like, okay, we want, and so what comes out on tops could be limited, bro. They're like, okay, 88% of people of these 100 power group in the DAO have voted for the limited pro. We should go for that, you know? Like, so I think it could be useful for things like that.
That's no different to how Footium have looked to explain to the early community how they wish to move forward. I mean, they've made no bones about it. You know, we're not going to be able to do everything that we all want to see in the game in a short space of time. So what we'll do is we'll come to you and say, well, this month, you know, and I remember the first one was always, do you want to have more, you know, cosmetic, you know, improvements, badge, club, stadium, things like that? Or would you like us to tweak the game engine so that you can make changes to tactics at halftime that could influence the game? And as you said, if the vote comes out and everybody wants to have a prettier looking badge and, you know, the ability to, you know, change the second kit and the third kit and what have you, and nobody gives a monkeys about tactics, well, great. They'll do what the community wants at that stage. And if the vote is, you know, no, we want, you know, we want more tactical abilities as managers, you know, we don't care what our badge looks like, we don't care about this, then let's do that. And yeah, I definitely think that's valid. You know, I think as you said, at the moment they are sort of doing it through, you know, the feedback system and, you know, asking, you know, half a dozen questions and what have you. But yeah, that isn't the same as, because, you know, they could still take those answers and then go, okay, well, they want that, but, you know, actually we're closer to finishing this off. Let's do this first. And, you know, let's think about that later on. Yeah. As I said, I think it's a combination of everything you and Ibe have said there, because, you know, I think the Serere, one of the selling points is also the mass adoption, making it feel as though you're playing a crypto game without having to know anything about crypto. Suddenly you start introducing this new acronym into the equation and everyone's like, what the hell is this all about? But again, if it's done in a softer, you know, as I say, it can just be an extension of the feedback that they're requesting, but make it a little bit more defined. You know, what we're going to do, every user is going to get one official vote. You know, it doesn't have to be structured in token form or anything else. Everyone's going to get one official vote. You know, once a month, once a quarter, we're going to have, you know, two very simple decisions to choose from. And we would like to know from you which one you want to see it implemented in the game first. Is it option A or option B? And if it's option A, and then, you know, 4 to 6 weeks later, option A pops out of production, how good's that going to be? People are going to go, hey, this is pretty good. And then we're going to start looking forward to those crunch decisions each quarter and go, I'll tell you what, wonder what they're going to come up with this time. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's interesting too. You know, and sometimes it might be closer to 50-50, and sometimes it'll be a landslide and go, no, we don't want that. We want this. Okay, great. It's an amazing temperature check from the team's point of view. And as I say, it's a way that they know they can deliver instant gratification to those that are voting. And if you haven't got an opinion, just don't vote.
I think everyone will have an opinion. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned there, Mark, is when people, you know, haven't been involved with cryptocurrencies and they do create an account and stuff, and they see that new acronym, you know, ETH, and they're thinking, what the hell is this? Essentially, it's the game economy, right? So you're playing solo, you're basically inherently investing in Ethereum. So a lot of the price rises that you guys have seen with your accounts has been mainly just to the price, the amazing rise of Ethereum over the last couple of years. So I think I could share some thoughts on Ethereum if you guys want that. And then I think that's...
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, obviously your background is fascinating. And so a lot of stuff crosses your desk on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. So, yeah, I personally, I'm quite keen to have a listen to how you feel that the market potentially in general, not any crazy predictions, but obviously 2021, you know, we've had this uprise of PFP avatars and, you know, I'd say terms like rug pull and, you know, lots of different things that, you know, those that have been in crypto, even for a short space of time now, probably starting to get familiar with the rise of the metaverse and things like this. In 2022, do you see much of the same, but perhaps, you know, weeding out the chaff and, you know, getting a flight to quality? Or do you see, you know, some new terms, some new things, which perhaps we're not used to yet that might start to creeping up regularly?
For sure, mate. All of the above. So yeah, I see hundreds of projects pass my desk every week. So that's probably why I saw So Rare logged in, create an account, saw it was good, and then just closed it, right? Because there's other projects to take a look at. I think that, like, I always knew NFTs were going to be big, but I totally underestimated them. I didn't think it would just come way too soon. It just happened and then exploded. And then you're seeing the rise of the cryptocurrencies. Everyone thought the narrative for this year was that everyone thought it was going to be a bull run and then it would tail off towards the end of the year, but it totally didn't happen. It's kind of been like sideways movement for a while. Obviously we've seen price rise in Ethereum, but that was based off fundamentals. So we can get into that in a second. But I think that now Ethereum, everyone saw that Ethereum gas fees were getting really high. So then that opened the door for like the other layer one chains like Solana and Cardano and a few others to like grab some market share on the NFT. So you can see a lot of platforms, NFT projects launching on Solana blockchain at the moment, just because it's faster and there's much lower fees. And that opened the door for companies like Stark, where you've seen their layer two solutions. So they're companies that most of them are centralized still, but there's some decentralized ones. So then you saw So Rare partner with them to make use of their technology to make Ethereum fees cheaper and faster, so they could mint these cards. But it's not truly decentralized, because obviously Solana is still centralized. Even to log into third-party apps, you have to like do your authentication, right, with Solana. So you can't use your wallet to log in. And if you want to export a card, you still have to mint it on the Ethereum blockchain layer one. So you still have to pay $200 or whatever to mint a card. So I think that these layer two solutions will see a big boom next year. So a lot of them don't have tokens, but I feel like they will release tokens, because creating a token is such a great marketing tool for raising capital and awareness and adoption. So I feel like I know Starkware don't have any plans to launch a token, but there are a few others that do. In terms of Ethereum, so 2 years ago on January, Ethereum was $180 in US dollars. And now it's roughly about 3,800. So that's like a 2,000% increase in 2 years. So I'm not sure if SoRare realized that it would grow so quickly when they made the decision to use ETH, although I think it was a good decision that they made at the time. Maybe they thought that in the future they would have to migrate away from it, because if they do want to get global adoption, I don't think they can use Ethereum as the basic currency. And I think, in my opinion, it depends what happens with the price of ETH. So what's happening with Ethereum at the moment, I don't know if you guys are aware, is it's moving from Ethereum 1.0 to 2.0, so it's having an upgrade. And that upgrade is in progress at the moment and is estimated to be finished around quarter two next year. So maybe towards the end of quarter two next year. So what that upgrade does is it restricts the Ethereum supply, so the ETH supply, so that it switches from proof of work to proof of stake. So if anyone knows what that means, it's basically instead of using electricity to do the mining to verify the transactions, they have validator nodes where they stake the Ethereum and then they use those instead. And so the supply of ETH, the net issuance is going to be restricted. So it's going to be quote unquote deflationary at some point next year. And so what that means is, essentially is there will be like some fluctuations in the price of ETH this year, and it will be quite volatile, especially when those new upgrades get launched. And then if the upgrades get launched and it's successful, then there will be some kind of like de-risking event for institutional investors. So your traditional investors, obviously, that asset's now upgraded and is running successfully. So it's de-risked. So like it's more attractive to them as an investment. So I, in my opinion, I think a lot of capital is going to flow into ETH when that upgrade happens. So I think that there will be some fluctuations in the price, probably sidewards for the first 6 months of this year. And then I think once that upgrade happens and if it's successful, then the price will continue to rise towards the end of this year. And then the following year, we should see ETH price explode, especially if it becomes deflationary, because if people are trying to invest in cryptos like as hedging against inflation, it becomes a more valuable like prospect.
Sure, no. So so what currency, what currency would you potentially feel more confident in? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, that 2 year run, I mean, I just did our annual report for Blackpool yesterday and it was 750 around this time last year. So we've gone from 750 to 3,800 in dollars versus Ethereum. I'm just thinking back, if the cards were always valued in, let's say, USDC from day one, wow, I don't think we would have seen anywhere near the level of card level inflation in fiat terms had we always played this game with a stable coin. The fact that we've now seen ETH go that 2,000%, as you said, you know, cards, you know, there are, you know, I know a lot of the newer managers come in and they do think with fiat, but there are still a lot of the older managers that go 0.1 ETH, whether it be 18 months ago, 2 months, 12 months ago, or 24 months ago. I bought a card for 0.1 ETH. I want to sell that card for 0.12 ETH, you know, and they will hold firm. Now, they won't just suddenly go, oh, no, because fiat's done this, I'm going to sell it now for 0.05 and no problem at all. You can have a good deal off me. It doesn't work like that. And had we all been thinking or conditions of thinking fiat from day one, and, you know, the cards that we went and put for £5 and £10 and £15, you know, there's no way that those cards will be going for 150 to 200 to 300 to £400 now. I don't think. I think Ethereum has has been the catalyst for these astronomical gains when you can convert it back to fiat and go, oh, wow, I've made X in fiat. Yes, you have, but you've made that because of how people have had this acceptance of ETH over the same period of time as well.
Yeah, totally agree. And the game economy is Ethereum. And I think that was a conscious choice from them at the start. I think it was a good one to back Ethereum and back the price of that. So the early adopters of the project do get rewarded, like financially. And so I think that that was a conscious decision. But at some point, it becomes, if you want to go global, like if you do the numbers, it becomes unsustainable. Like I've done the numbers and run it through, and I think they've got probably 2 years maximum before they have to switch to a stable coin. And I think it has to switch. Otherwise, they won't be able to dominate globally because the Ethereum liability in the accounts, if you just calculate that, right? So say you've got, just did a quick calculation here, say you've got 100,000 managers with 0.1 ETH in the account, right? Doesn't sound too unrealistic. You know, that's at the current price of ETH, this $38 million liability if everyone wants to cash out at the same time. But in 2 years' time, my prediction for ETH is 15,000 US. And so that would be, the liability goes from like 38 million to 150 million. And then if you extrapolate
that's a few more users in there as well.
Yeah, and if you extrapolate that to 1 million users, say, which is possible, right, in 2 years' time, say, and they've got 0.1 ETH, which is a small amount, then that's a 380 million liability. And then if the price of ETH does raise to 15K in 2 years, that's a 1.5 billion liability. So, like,
you'll be able to buy an under 23 unique goalkeeper for that.
Yeah, it gets to a point where the numbers, and also then the limiteds, I think the limiteds will become rares pretty much in 2 years' time. If you do the numbers, it's exactly the same. So they would have to introduce like another card, like one of 10,000, say it's an uncommon light green color or something. But at that point, it just becomes unsustainable. So they will have to switch to a stable coin at some point. I just can't see it growing without it, unfortunately.
No, great insight. I really appreciate you sharing that. I think a lot of people would just go, oh, he's 15K, great, hold.
As much as I love Ethereum, I absolutely love it. I absolutely love Ethereum and I'm super bullish on it. And it's one of the main reasons like I'm happy to park some to buy extra cards on the platform because I'm just going to have it in ETH anyway. So, but if you do the numbers, they'll have to switch at some point.
No, that's fair. Excellent. Look, I mean, I don't know if there's anything else you would like to see or share for 2022. I mean, as I say, I think you've come on. I mean, your background, your history, you know your stuff. You've got, you know, massive head start on these under 23 goalkeepers. I think as soon as anyone listens to this once Hybe's edited it, I think I say he'll scour the market for a few hours before he launches the tweet to encourage others to listen to this today. If there's any under 23 goalkeepers left on the market and you want to follow Sam's strategy, look, I think you're nicely poised for a fantastic year. I think the ideas that you've had there around DAO-based decisions, yeah, I think that's maybe something which we can potentially, yeah, look to champion together on Twitter, because I think that would be a very good way, even if we said, you know, once a quarter, once every 6 months, let's have something where there is some input. I mean, there is enough input out there. It is channeling and focusing that input so that the team, we'd like to think we know what we're talking about. there are a lot of obviously moving parts behind the scene at Serrera. And, you know, there are a lot of people that are putting forward some very strong arguments to say this should happen for this reason, this should happen for this reason. We don't have all of the information to hand, but I'd like to think that we're going in the right direction with certain things. And maybe that is just something for 2022, that grey area, which is tough to find between the community and Serrera now. It used to be very, very cozy. Serrera come to the community happy anyway, everyone's loving life. You know, Serrera says we'll do this, community goes, yeah, and it happens. And then it's only now that the community's got, you know, a wider cross-section of different voices, you know, different motivations, different budgets, you know, different time horizons. And all of a sudden you plop something into the community now and it's not going to resonate or it's not going to sit with everybody. But it is, how do you find what percentage of the audience is it resonating with? And I think we'd all benefit from that, because, as I say, if something I was really wanting to see in the game, I got told that I'm one of only 10% of people that want to see it and 90% of people want to see something else, it'd be a lot easier for me to turn around and go, absolutely no problem at all. Let's get that thing that 90% of people want in the game and then let's have another think about, you know, what might come after that. But I think because people all want different things, you can't please everyone. And we don't know where, and we don't know where on the scale of priorities things are. Something that, I say, you might particularly want this year, you know, might not even be in the thought of the production team at the moment. But we have no clue of finding out. And we've tried with like little Trello boards. We've tried with, as I say, the AMAs, which have drifted. We didn't even have an AMA in Q4 last year, did we? So that's drifted onto, you know, Q1 of this year as well. Let's see if we can get a stronger bridge between the users and the team. We all want the same thing. We all want the game to succeed. We all want the same, we all want the game to prosper. But yeah, I think with each passing month, there's going to be tougher and tougher decisions to make. And, you know, if we can have a little say in that, then yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Just to finish up, I think the SoRed team's doing a fantastic job, and I think they've got a great platform, and I'm super bullish on it. That didn't come across already. And I think with a few simple fixes this year and some help, some feedback from the community, I think it could be fantastic, fantastic year for SoRed.
I think so, yeah. I think it's going to be a huge year. I think we've all talked about a few frustrations on this call, so it's maybe not came across as bullish as we normally are, but I think we probably are all more bullish on Surrey this year.
I feel more bullish today than I did when I was speaking on John Nellis the other week or a few weeks ago. I think the realisation for me was the fact that we're all playing the game and most of us have got a strategy that right now needs something new from Surrey to make our strategy successful. So in the back of our mind, we've all got the belief that the game is going to go on and do the things we want it to do, or the team is going to make the changes they want to make. You wouldn't be sitting there with 250 goalkeepers. I wouldn't be sitting there, you know, with the defensive midfielders or with the fullbacks or with tier two and tier three super rares thinking someday in the future they're going to do something to super rares. We're all carrying something which would benefit. So we're all speculating, and that speculation is largely down to the success of Surrey. So I think we're all showing that bullishness, we're all showing that positivity through our actions at auction, in our collection, in the way that we're playing the game. The frustrations are that the execution from the team doesn't quite match the strategy that we're carrying straight away. Because yeah, we'd all, you know, I'm sure you'd love to cash in half your goalkeepers and then boom, you'd be onto something completely new that would take you and your collection to a new level. I'd love to get shot of a load of super rares that I don't use that, you know, I feel that I'd be giving away too cheaply if I give them away now, when one small tweak to the system and all of a sudden the multiple for super rares could be 4, 5, 6 times a rare, where I know right now I can get a super rare goalkeeper at 2 times the price of a rare. It's absolutely nuts. I feel the same conviction as I did when I'm stockpiling Declan Rice's 2 years ago, or when I'm stockpiling, you know, guys like Trent, knowing that you can't have Trent at 1 ETH when Kimmich's at 3. It's not possible. But, you know, that market's now closed up. The super rare market, in my opinion, has to go from 2 to 3 times a rare multiple to 5, 6, 7. But that could mean that rare prices go down. It could mean that super rare prices stay where they are and rares just adjust down as we start to appreciate that, oh, I can aspire now to move up to Division 3, or I can aspire to move up to Division 2, because those super rares are attainable. And there could be a lot of people with very valuable rare collections that may suffer because their rares might go down because the new en vogue card happens to be super rare later on this year. We don't know, but, you know, going around full circle, we are all bullish. We are all positive. And as I say, I think that's shown through our actions and the way that we communicate across social media. It takes something antagonistic for the community to really turn and really be against something. And I think we hopefully we won't have those in the future. There are gaming companies out there and developers that, you know, don't listen to their community full stop, and they just come out with new iterations, you know, because it's a game that they think the community wants to play, and they haven't done any temperature checks at all. Surrey aren't like that by any stretch. And I say, Brian say 40 members of staff they finished at the end of the year, and the target's 200. That's monster. That's huge. Of course, you've got to manage it. You've got to get the systems in place. But if 200 people could do what 40 people did, when we know what the first core team of 10 or 12 did, I mean, geez, 10 or 12 people absolutely smashed the lights out. You know, you'd think now that the majority of the 40 have been in their position for long enough now that they're on a path to smash it for 2022. And then again, you start multiplying that by four or five times again. It's scary. I'd like to think that all these little footnotes that we're asking about Serrer doing, they're going to be a thing of the past in 12 months. And if it's 18 months, okay, we'll all be patient for 18 months.
I think so. Yeah. And we'll get Sam back on, see how his predictions have went. If we're on the road to 15.
Yeah, I might come back and say, guys, I was completely wrong. It crashed or something.
Yeah, I'll be asking you about all these goalkeepers I'm buying.
Yeah, probably put them up. It'll take me 2 hours to put them up for sale.
That's it. That's it. Right, Sam, well, it's been an absolute pleasure. The insight you've given us today has been great. I think this is an episode that our listeners will love. I'm sure you'll get a lot of questions off the back of it. I'm sure we'll have more as well, and we'll keep chatting. It's been good.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. Look forward to the new game you're bringing out as well, where you have to get five goalkeepers to score exactly 200 points. Look, really, really, really looking forward to that one. I know you're...
That's Australia only, that one.
Australia and Switzerland.
Yeah, when the A-League comes on, we'll do it.
Sounds like a plan. Brilliant.
See you guys.
So, that brings us to the end of today's Serrer Global Fantasy Football Podcast. I hope you found it useful. And as always, if you could like, subscribe and leave a review, then we can help introduce the fantastic concept to more users. See you next time.